Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. As you know, we're airing a special series of interviews with truth tellers in our communities. On Monday, we heard from Kent Mayor Dana Ralph, who I just think is one of the most wonderful mayors in Washington State, but maybe the country. Someone who really, really wants to serve people regardless of their political party and who tries to, at every turn, be nonpartisan, speak truth, use common sense. Today on Truth Tellers, I want to turn to the city of Seattle. This year, 7 of 9 Seattle City Council seats are up for grabs. And this is a pivotal moment for a city that has been truly struggling with crime and disorder, around homelessness, around substance abuse. And our next truth teller has spoken out about those issues in a big way. Her name is Olga Sagan. She is the owner of a popular Seattle bakery called Piroshki Piroshki. In fact, we first had her on Undivided in February of 2022 when she had to temporarily shut down one of her locations due to concerns over crime. Here's part of that story.
There have been 2 stabbings and 3 shootings on this block just in the past 12 days, 2 of them deadly. On Friday, the city's new mayor stood with the police chief and prosecutors to say enough.
Things have to drastically change.
As they spoke, Seattle police officers were clearing the area, telling drug users to move along. A mobile precinct sat nearby. Outside Piroshki Piroshki, which looked like this just a week ago, the area was cleared out by Friday afternoon, but not nearly soon enough for owner Olga Sagan.
It's just banging your head against the wall at this point.
It was the deadly shooting last Sunday that finally forced her hand. The bakery's surveillance video captured people running from the sounds of gunshots outside.
It's the 3rd one in a month. So as a responsible business owner, I'm putting my employees and customers on the line to be shot. I mean, I don't want to wait till it's too late and my business is done because some of my employees died and I'm carrying this with me. I mean, my employee safety is my number one priority. My customer safety is right up there. We would open at 7 a.m., come out in the morning. If there was anybody here, we would ask them to kind of, you know, just please, if you can step away, this is a private property. This was meant for people to have pastries here, and they would. They would stand here, have their coffee, have their pastry. This shelf here that now is a, you know, drug shelf.
For whatever reason in Seattle, it can be hard for business owners to speak up, to stand up for themselves, to speak up about anti-business policies like increased taxes, to speak up about the anti-police movement, which is making our neighborhoods less safe. But Olga Sagan decided a long time ago that she was not going to stay silent. And that makes her today's truth teller. Olga, welcome to Undivided.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Always a pleasure. How is business?
Overall, we're very good. I think we had a 300 pieces pop-up order yesterday in San Diego, California. So we have huge presence outside of the state and in the state. Pike Place Market is doing great, and our 3rd Pike still down about 80%.
Gotcha.
Before COVID.
We'll dive into the 3rd Pike location more, as you know.
Okay.
The last time we really had you on the show was when we were down there.
And we're going to be opening a new convention center.
Oh, that's right. And I saw the new convention center. It's beautiful.
I
worry if they're going to be able to attract enough events to fill it, given the state of things.
They're trying. And, you know, they're doing a really good job. But my location will be right across Paramount Theater.
Oh, nice.
It's outside.
Okay.
So you can access it without conventions.
And so your total number of locations right now is?
Right now, 3 total. That would be the 4th.
That will be the 4th.
Yes.
So for people who aren't familiar with your story, introduce them to you again, a little bit about your life.
Sure. I am an immigrant from Russia. Fun fact, found my birth certificate. My dad is Ukrainian. My mom is Russian.
How long ago did you find that out?
Just a few months ago, I was searching some paperwork. I'm like, oh, I'm half Ukrainian. Wow. Okay. You see how complicated things are. So, half Ukrainian, half Russian. And moved here when I was 16. I was a Ballard Beaver. Moving 15 years later, I'm the owner of Piroshki Piroshki Bakery. And I love what I do. I love what I do.
What is a pierogi for people who aren't familiar?
It's a handheld sandwich like pie. It's a meal. It's a pie. It's a breakfast. It's lunch. It's snack. It's everything you want it to be.
I had a good salmon one. I actually had, that was my first pierogi when I came down to a store. I'm really mortified to admit that, but I had a salmon one.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Isn't it?
It's like
Lox bagel, but it's a sandwich.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So last time that we sat down for an interview like this was the beginning of 2022, and you were frustrated.
To say the least.
To say the least. There were some tears.
Yeah.
And it really centered around how bad downtown had become and the frustration that no one with the city was listening to you. Can you go back to that time as a business owner with what you were contending with?
Sure. I went on this whole circle of things in my head. At first, I was, and downtown was bad. I mean, you had drug addicts, drugs were selling, there was a night market. It was just undescribable. You have to see videos to believe what downtown of Seattle looked like. And I was just so passionately sad and upset that no one is listening to, and I have to close my doors because no one gives a,
You can say shit on a podcast if you want.
No one gives a damn. And it was just breaking my heart because I was knocking, on all the doors. And then we had shootings, and I'm like, I can't do it anymore. I cannot bring my employees here. I cannot bring my customers here. So I shut my doors and spoke out very loudly and very passionately and really kind of put my truth in front of everything. And I stopped being scared about saying things. And I didn't care if I'm saying it to you, if I'm saying it on Fox, if I'm saying it, it wasn't about left, it wasn't about right, it was about just, it's not safe. It's not safe and businesses are dying, literally dying there.
Did it surprise you that people would try to paint it as safe? Or, what I get when I talk about downtown Seattle, and even then, mm-hmm. was that, I'm over-exaggerating things. And then you'd show me the video of, shootings happening down the block and people fleeing, people shooting up in front of your store. Why do you think there are people in the media and also in politics in Seattle who actively try to downplay how bad downtown Seattle got?
I actually have a new theory. About a week ago, I read a book called Law of Attraction. And they say you have to say good things for them to happen. Maybe they're following that book. I don't know.
They're trying to manifest it. Like if you claim it's good, then it'll be good.
I mean, I don't have any other explanation for that.
Yeah. And you talked about that, sort of everything's political in Seattle. It's like you can't just see something, say what's true, which is downtown was a disaster, without it becoming political. Like if you come on with me, people will be like, oh, she's right wing. If you go, talk to the stranger, people will be like, oh, she's left wing.
Yeah.
How frustrating is that? And has it been for you to try to say what's true, what is actually happening, what you've seen with your own eyes, and have it always painted as political?
It's super frustrating, but I don't care.
Good.
Who can paint it however they want to paint it. I'm just telling, hey, this is my story. This is my perspective. This is how I see it. You can assign whatever labels you want to assign to it and deny it and find excuses and be a victim or whatever you want to be. I don't care. I just see what I see and I will say what I see.
But at the same time, when we sat down, I think it was last February, and there had just been another shooting mm-hmm. down the block and you decided we're going to close the doors. You told me at the time with tears in your eyes that you were done speaking out, that it wasn't making a difference, that you were just going to be a good business owner and pay your taxes and that's it. And I didn't believe you at the time.
And you did right. You didn't believe me. So I told you I did a lot of soul searching last year, a lot of it. And then So I was done speaking out because I was banging my head against the wall. But what that time did, I think it actually grabbed attention. And then I started seeing other businesses speaking out. I think I kind of helped open the floodgates of, let's say something. And then I kept thinking about it. I'm like, our stupid government. And then as I'm going through and blaming everything on government and being a victim and all this other stuff, I'm like, hang on. Maybe it's not government. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's us. Maybe it's us who are not demanding better for ourselves. So I think I went through that thought process of, you know what? I cannot sit at my home, in my home, and watch Netflix and be angry at government. I need to say things and keep them accountable as individual, because it is up to us. It is up to us in the city, in the state, in the country to make government accountable. Or if they don't want to be accountable, fine. But it's up to us to speak up and not just, you know, step over home people without housing or drug addicts or people with mental illness. Go home, turn your TV and be like, oh, this is disgusting outside. I don't think that's who we should be.
How far are you willing to take that sentiment? You know, I have tried to shame you into running for something. I know other people have tried to as well.
I'm considering running for city council. I know that we have election this year, and I have been thinking about it, and I have been really struggling with that decision, because I know that if I put my hands and heart and soul into something, it's going to be overly, I will put everything I got. And you know, always we come in as a female, as an immigrant, as a business owner, we have all those insecurities to, am I qualified to run? But then I look at some other city councils we have, I'm like, well, if they're qualified, I should be qualified, you know. But I'm not a career politician, and that's kind of throws me off. I'm more after, you know, after making downtown better, making downtown safe, having it all inclusive and taking care of people. So I am considering running for position 7, but I'm also wishing that somebody who is a seasoned politician who know how to do policies probably will do better job if they would just care more about business community, especially when his district is in the business community.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. This is interesting. I mean, I disagree that you have to be a seasoned politician to do a good job on the city council. I have seen many a seasoned politician who on paper you think they can run, and then they're terrible at the job. Yeah. I think it has to do with the person and the passion behind the person, whether they could be successful. You know, right now, Andrew Lewis is one of the only incumbents running for his seat again.
Yeah.
You are a business owner downtown. You rely in part on his advocacy right now.
Yeah.
So if you were to challenge him and lose, are you worried about whether you would be able to continue to have his ear?
I don't think so. I think he's a career politician, and he is a reasonable human being. And I don't think we're there to. I think the goal is to have downtown be in a better shape, and whatever that takes. And I'm sure that's Lewis's goal as well. You know, it's just how do you focus on it, and how do you keep focusing on it? How you just don't do it while you're trying to be elected? How do you do it after you're elected? What do you do? How do you show up?
But how do you think he's done? You know, I've been critical of Andrew Lewis because he's flip-flopped on police funding.
Yeah.
I feel like he just all of a sudden had an epiphany that homelessness and drug abuse downtown were an issue.
Yeah.
So just from your perspective, not even as someone considering running for that seat, as a business owner who relies on, you know, downtown being a good place to work and visit, how has he done?
I think that he is... Under new mayor, I feel like he's trying.
Emboldened, maybe?
You could call it emboldened, or you can call it, you know, I finally see the issue. We have no money in the city of Seattle, and where do money come from? Money comes from businesses. You know, I'm a little bit upset when I look at all kinds of committees we have, and his district is downtown. He's not even anywhere on the, you know, business development committee. Sarah Nelson heads that. He needs to be part of that. He's the businesses in downtown. It's not just people in downtown. I do live in downtown as well, but the businesses in downtown, crucial part of our economic engine. And I feel like Lewis previously was a little bit ignorant of that. And now I feel like he's coming around and understanding that this is crucial, and downtown is crucial, and it needs help, it needs savings, and businesses need savings. How long will it last? I always hope for the best, But you know, I'm watching him almost every single day. I'm looking at what he's doing, and for now he looks promising, but I haven't seen consistency from him yet, and that's why I'm considering that maybe I can try, but it's a big responsibility.
What are you weighing when you try to make that decision? Because we're in it. This is the election year. You yeah. don't have a lot of time to make that decision about whether this is something that you think is good for you and good for the city. So what yeah. is left for you to consider?
I think, you know, my business, of course, that is demanding. I do have amazing leadership team. I would not be anywhere where I am right now without my incredible, diverse, fun, you know, strong team. My kids, my personal life, my passions. I'm always educating myself. I'm always reading books. I'm always, trying to be better, and just understanding that if I am to run, and if I am, who knows, right, win, what kind of toll it's gonna take on me, and to do a good job, because I would be banging my head against the wall to try to do a good job.
You mentioned your kids, all daughters, right?
All daughters.
You have like the most beautiful family. I've seen pictures that you guys took. I mean, it's like a little supermodel family. But what do you think it would show your daughters, though, if you decide, yeah, I'm going to do this because I think I can do a good
job?
Oh,
they're guilting me into doing it. They're like, Mom, you know, if you're not going to... So I run it by them. I said, hey, there isn't this opportunity for me. And what do you guys think? They look at me like, you have to do it. I'm like, thank you, I appreciate it. But, you know, like, let's talk more about it, because it's a commitment. It's a lot of time commitment. And I already, you know, don't have as much time. I will pivot and I will figure it out, but it's a time commitment. Well, and they say, Mom, you're an immigrant from Russia. You speak with an accent. You're a businesswoman. You could show so many immigrants and so many women that you can do whatever the heck you want when you come to the United States, as long as you put your, you know, as long as you wake up every morning, you do your thing, you motivate yourself, you know, being true to yourself. So they really want me to do it.
Yeah. There is also a price you pay, though, in running for something or in serving in that capacity. I mean, I would argue you've already, over the past couple of years, put yourself out there. That's why we're having you on the Truth Teller series. You know, you've been, anybody who in Seattle speaks out and just says truths about crime and homelessness and drug abuse, there is this little segment of the city that will just vilify them.
Yeah.
And you're going to face that
in
a real way if you run. Are you ready to take that head on and to deal with what might come?
If I am to run, and if people are to choose me, they're going to choose me on their own risk. So I am confident in that I'm coming from a good place. And I'm confident that I can listen to people and understand people, and I understand the problems. And that's another big issue is, you know, I could say I'm biased because I'm a business owner, right? I'm biased because I live in downtown. But... that's who I am. That's what I represent, you know. And if people want to choose that, representing someone who knows how to run a business, who knows downtown, who knows, then that's people made their choice, and I will not be concerned with whoever doesn't like it.
Yeah, which takes a lot of guts, and it takes a lot of bravery in today's political climate. Whenever I look at anyone who wants to speak out, anyone who wants to run for something, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so brave. And I think for people watching, what I try to encourage them to do on the podcast is to be brave, to not worry about the consequences. But that's a hard thing when you run a business. You're not just worried about your own, you know, reputation. You're worried about your business.
Yeah.
What is the advice you would give to people about the cost benefit of speaking out on issues like you've spoke out on?
Professional or personal?
Both.
Okay. I think professional, I'll be transparent. Before I start speaking out, I went to my team and I asked them, because they would be affected. We're one big family there. I'm like, guys, can I, like Fox called me. Can I, what do you think? Can I go on Fox and say things, because we know no one likes Fox here. And then they go, Olga, you just saying the truth. Why do you have to discriminate where you're saying your truth at? So I got their support. I got their green light to keep speaking my truth, to be true to myself. So I felt comfortable because I want to make sure my employees feel comfortable and they know where I stand. And personally, the first time I got a lot of grief on Twitter or whatever else, I was devastated. I was like, oh my God, I'm a horrible person. And then right now I'm just smiling. You know, I'm like, I'm talking the talk and walking the walk. You know, I read the books, I educate myself, I try to understand other point of view and not be one-sided. When you just say, oh, you're right-winged or whatever, that's not even an argument. What is it has to do with anything, you know?
Yeah, it's all about identity and not about ideas. And, you know, same for me on Twitter in particular, you start to realize that they're just faceless accounts, not using real names. And it's sort of like you said, you're out there, you're using your name, you're putting yourself out there, your business out there, you're walking the walk and you're talking the talk. And then you have people on Twitter and it's like,
I sometimes people would say something outrageous or really, you know, far. Mm-hmm. And I reach out to them in message. I said, you know what, I would love to have this conversation with you. I would love to hear you and talk to you about where you're coming from, because I want to understand. People don't answer to me.
Yeah, no.
They never answer to me.
Yeah, they don't want to engage in a real conversation. No. And that's, you know, when people don't, it's like, well, then your opinion can't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me if you don't want to actually talk about it. Yeah. You were featured recently on a CBS Evening News story. About downtowns across the country and which ones are rebounding, which ones are not. Seattle being one that really is towards the bottom of other big cities. It focused a lot on impacts of the pandemic.
Yeah.
When you, because you live and work downtown, when you look at what's happening down there, how much of it do you attribute to the pandemic versus the other issues like homelessness and substance abuse?
Today? There is no pandemic today.
But you do have a workforce that hasn't come back to downtown in the numbers it was pre-pandemic. What do you attribute? So do you, is that a result though of the pandemic?
I don't think so. I think it was a result of our downtown, state of our downtown.
Yeah.
We travel a lot, and I just was telling you, we have 27 pop-ups this month across United States. Our downtown, one of the emptiest downtowns in the United States. And we're not the only tech place in the United States. I think it's the lack of policies and lack of law enforcement and lack of focus on downtown to make it habitable for everyone. Mm-hmm. But I have to add that I am seeing change right now. Every day I'm seeing change. So I hope that we're going to see more changes, better changes, and I hope that people will trust downtown again and employers will trust downtown again to be like, hey, come back to downtown. Don't be scared. Don't be afraid. We're working on it. It's not thriving, but it's getting to zero. I feel like it's getting to a neutral point. Slowly but surely.
So let's talk about some of those changes in real terms based on like what you're seeing down there from the last time that we sat down like this and what it looked like outside, you know, your store. What physically on the street with, you know, illicit activity has improved in your estimation?
I would say that it went down by about, there's some days that it's down by 90%.
Like, and you're talking people using drugs openly, selling stolen merchandise.
Laying down naked, taking their pants off, peeing in front of you, pooping in front of you, all of that. We would say there are some days that I'm like, wow, is president in town? You know, it's beautiful. and then some days, some evenings, I would, last Saturday, I was walking through where the Ross is. Man, it was shady. And no police presence. So I don't think maybe we have enough resources yet to kind of keep it 24/7. And it's funny, the second police is gone, the second, you know, something, more doors are closed, like we close at 3 p.m., 4 p.m., you see a lot more of this coming, of of things coming at night, you know.
I have to laugh that we're at the point where, it's because I have to laugh so I don't cry, but we're at the point where we have to talk about, measure it in percentages of number of people like defecating out in the open. Oh, it's down 90% this week.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, that's fact. That's literally a fact. And so, and it's funny because sometimes I would go downtown and it's just crazy. Like, it's bad. People are doing crazy stuff. And then they come out during the day on Saturday when everything's been cleaned up. It's morning, it's 9 a.m. And then you see one mentally ill person screaming at everyone. You're like, oh, this is weird. Look at this person screaming. But then last night, everyone was screaming. So I think it's really interesting to see how really drastic when you see it in the calm, mm-hmm. how drastically it looks different versus how it's just all over the place. And then and how we used to that, you know, and when it's calm and quiet outside and there's not a lot of activities, then one person will make such a huge impact. But when there's 45 people doing that, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's that.
You know, one of the things I do think the pandemic did is it, you know, pulled people out of that downtown who were there for legitimate reasons, mm-hmm. who were doing business, who were shopping, who were working. And we just heard from Amazon that it's going to start to require its employees, I think it's 3 days a week to come back to the office, which I've said I think is a gift to Seattle.
It is a gift. It is a blessing. Thank you, Amazon. If anyone listening from any businesses who make any business decisions in Seattle, thank you for that. Small businesses, we need people. And I want to be, again, I want to not just talk the talk. I'm open. I'm at 80% down in sales, but I'm open because I want to say, hey, come here. Please come here. We're open. We're trying. It will take a village. It will take a village.
Yeah. And to that point, you know, there have been some of the most critical, I think, businesses down there that have closed, like Starbucks, right there on, you know, the heart of the city. It was kind of a meeting point. Yeah. I don't blame them for closing. Yeah. But, you know, the mayor had his state of the city and he talked about trying to attract businesses to the vacant storefronts. What would you say to your fellow business owners about that sentiment? You just said, like, you're down 80% in sales, but you care about the city and you're trying really hard to keep your place open. What would you say to your fellow business owners who are wrestling with that decision? Do I do business downtown or not?
I don't know what to say. Because if I would have only that location, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be reopening it. I wouldn't survive on it.
Yeah.
So it's really, they have to think about themselves. At the end of the day, it's their own mental health, and it's their own funds, and it's their skin on the line. So I really don't know what to say to small businesses.
It's a good answer because I think that you're right. I mean, it's not charity. You're not doing charity. No. You are trying to survive financially. And so if you can't do it, you can't do it. If you can't keep your people safe, you can't do it.
Yeah.
What do you think the mayor can do or what do you see that he is doing to try to bring businesses back to those storefronts? I mean, first, let me ask before I even get there. He said he's going to give a special focus to business owners of color.
Yes.
I think that's stupid, but that's just me. do you have a particular opinion? The reason I think it's stupid is I think you can't be picky. Like, you have to take anyone who wants to be down there.
I don't look at it as pickiness. I look at it as something that is, you have to always make a conscious choice, right? Mm-hmm. You have to always have, like for me, you know, I support minority business owners and people of color. So I always have to have that in my mind when I look at two presentations or anything else. You always have to be conscientious of diversity.
Yeah.
So maybe he's saying that he will be conscientious of diversity, not per se picking, but yeah, we do need everyone. We do need everything. And as a person in the business community, I just came back from convention and I'm going to another one in a week. And big businesses that, you know, we don't like, and I'm not talking about P.F. Chang's or whatever, even there's so many new brands out there, so many new brands. No one wants to go to Seattle. The policies that Seattle have created are toxic for businesses. They're toxic. They're toxic for even small businesses. They're toxic for big businesses. We're just you know, billions. And that's why we don't have so many new restaurants. That's why so many operators and chefs from the country don't want to come here because of all the laws and policies we have implemented to really make it a hostile work environment. And it's not about, you know, there is a conversation about paying fair wages, and there's a lot of conversation. There are so many good businesses out there that pay very good wages, that take care of their employees, and they're proud to be in the business they're in, and they still cannot go to Seattle because of our secure scheduling, because of all the crime, because of years of anti-business policies. And now we're realizing, hey, we don't have budget in the, you know, we don't have money in the budget. Why don't we have money in the budget? Let me think about it. Yeah. So,
yeah, it seems like common sense, but yet there has been this, I think it's a really false battle between workers and business, mm-hmm. you know, as if only workers can thrive or only business can thrive, mm-hmm. business owners. And that it's so silly because you need both to create a strong economy. So if you were on the city council today, what would you suggest that the city do? What would you advocate for to try to make this a more pleasing place for people to do business?
It's a hard question, but I would really revisit all the policies that have been created for businesses.
Taxes,
secure scheduling, making sure that what kind of variance can be created. What can we do to attract businesses into downtown that will attract people into downtown, that will make downtown a cool place to hang out, not the place you just want to run through to get home.
Is it tax incentives? Is it tax breaks? Is it helping cover the cost of, you know, making leases less expensive?
I think there is a lot of approaches. It depends what segment you're talking about. So if you're talking about small business segment, I think it's a different problem. So it's the small business would have your personal guarantee. Small business would have your TI allowance. City of Seattle has very difficult rules on to open a business, bring like old building to a new standard is very, very hard. Mm-hmm. And I feel like right now you need to spend, you know, $500,000 to even start to bring the business up to the new code. So looking at those code variances and creating and being flexible with it, understanding that mom and pop shop cannot invest $500,000 to just start building their business.
Right.
And then for big businesses, I feel like it's, hey, we're not going to tax the crap out of you for everything you do. Hey, we're not going to make you do secure scheduling in an impossible environment with minimum wage already 15, now technically 20, 25. You're not going to hire anyone for 15. You know, we start at 20, 25. It's not one fits all. I think there needs to be a lot of approaches and they need to be different.
Yeah. I do want to quickly talk about policing because, as you said, you know, it seems just like, oh, we know there's not enough staffing. I mean, there are 500 officers down.
Yeah.
I believe a lot of that is a result of the political climate. They've been vilified for a long time. I wouldn't want to work for an employer, you know, politicians mm-hmm. who openly dislike mm-hmm. or distrust me. How do you think the city begins to rebuild that trust in a way where we can rebuild our police department?
You're asking me hard questions today. What is up with you?
I always ask hard questions.
Well, today's specifically hard. I think, I think it's a balance.
Yeah.
But I think it's also common sense. And I think my personal opinion from what I'm seeing, I'm not trying to put that opinion into everyone. I think police and fire department being called to a lot of calls that there could be other people attending to that calls. I don't know what that is. But police resources are being spent on things that police is not meant to do, not trained to do historically. And then you have a robbery or something else and police is busy, you know, doing something that maybe a mental health professional can help with or some counseling can help with. So I feel like, again, having a holistic approach, okay, we're 500 officers short. That's a reality. How do we look at that and use the rest of the officers in a way that they do their job and keep cities safe versus attending to mental illness versus attending to unhoused. So I think it's really deserves some dissecting. And I think we need to realize, okay, we're not going to hire right now 500 police officers. How then do we look at it differently and restructure it and pivot our community in a way that we can be able to, you know, function with understaffing? That's what I do for my business. I always say, hey, here is a problem. I'm understaffed. Mm-hmm. What do I do different to take that as a fact? Right now it's a fact.
Right.
Maybe they will come. Maybe not. This is a fact. How do we do to make things successful with that fact in place?
Yeah, and I do think it's important because we just have to come to terms with you can't recover 500 officers probably in the next decade or more. And so, I think starting to actually see some headway with our homelessness, mm-hmm. drug crisis, that is the best way to take that off the plate mm-hmm. of officers, is mm-hmm. to fix the freaking mm-hmm. crises, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we haven't seen any sort of headway in that regard.
And again, for me, I feel police is there to mitigate situations that require police. A lot of mental illness and a lot of drug addiction, they don't require police, but somehow that's all we throw at them.
Well, some people in the throes of a mental health crisis can be dangerous. We've
and then that. And then you get the police involved. Yeah. But there is room to get there.
Yeah.
Let's take care of that room before we have to have police involved.
Going back to something as we kind of wrap up that you mentioned earlier, I do believe that we've seen more business owners speak out, even if they're worried about the consequences. I think you were at the forefront of that. And the more business owners who just say what they see, I think it's going to have a positive impact. What can you tell those business owners about the importance of making their voice heard at this moment in the city?
Say things. Be part of, I'm part of Seattle Restaurant Alliance. I'm part of Chamber. I'm part of every organization. And those poor small business owners. And we're not going to be a victim. We always can do more. Just do whatever it is. Do more. Try harder because it works. We need to have our voices heard. Our business community is incredible. Our, from Tom Douglas Group to Ethan Stoll Group to your Garmondo to your Ascend in Bellevue, we have such an incredible business community, caring business community that pay very good wages, that pay living wages. We are important. And we need to say that, and we need to be proud of the work we do, and we just keep speaking out.
It is a critical year for the city. 7 of 9 seats are going to be on the ballot in November. 5 of them aren't even going to have incumbents. So what would your message be to voters as they set out trying to figure out who they want to represent them at City Hall this year?
My message would be that, look at what have happened in the last 12 years around the city and just realize, we always like to give people second chance and third chance and fourth chance and fifth chance. Sometimes enough is enough. And then sometimes we have been giving a lot of our politicians many chances to fix things, to make it happen. And we haven't been seeing a lot of results. Again, mayor, I can see that's a change, right? I see a new mayor and I see change. Maybe not, I'm not agreeing with everything. Maybe not everyone is agreeing with everything, but we're seeing changes and we're not moving backwards. So how do we see changes and not move backwards? So let's try to move forward. And it's okay to change. It's okay to bring new people in. We have an amazing community. And on city level, on county level, man, on state level, let's bring new faces in. Let's bring new passions in. Let's be diverse. Let's see different opinions and let's make it work.
I agree. Olga Sagan, thank you for being here. And thank you for being one of the people, and we don't have enough of them, one of few people willing to just speak the truth, because it's harder than it sounds.
Thank you so much.
I'm just speaking for myself, but I think Olga Sagan would make an awesome addition to the Seattle City Council. And I hope many more small business owners
take her lead, speak out about the issues the city is facing, and really look at this election year in Seattle as an opportunity to turn things around. This has been the second in our special series on Truth Tellers. Coming up Friday, we will have yet another edition. Remember, subscribers to the show get early access to all of these special episodes. So if you want to become a subscriber, help us support this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback, you can do that in two ways. Patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.